Thank you so much, Barnum and Valdek, for that great presentation on embedding your web app into Teams. Next up, we have a fantastic presentation from Bob and Rabia about how you can make your Teams app part of your day. Over to you guys.
Well, thanks, Christina, and hi, everyone. My name is Bob German, coming to you today from Boston, Massachusetts, and I think a lot of you probably know my colleague, Rabia Williams, who hails from Brisbane, Australia. We're both cloud developer advocates at Microsoft and really excited to be part of this program.
Thanks, Bob, for doing the intro for both of us. Hey, we have some live learners here with us, so please introduce yourselves and tell us where you're from.
Hi, I am Cassie Breview. I am a cloud developer advocate at Microsoft, and I am based in Minnesota.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maxime Rouillet. I'm a cloud advocate at Microsoft as well. I am located in the magnificent city of Montreal.
Hey, everyone. My name is Cecil Phillip, and I am also a cloud developer advocate here at Microsoft, and right now in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Hi, everyone. This is Hamida Khatri. I am a Microsoft Student Learn Ambassador, and I'm currently doing my PhD. I'm here learning about how this app development works in Microsoft Teams.
Okay, so in this segment, we're going to deep dive into some of the app capabilities that we saw earlier. And I have this pressing question, Bob. I saw Tamomi in HS segment where they're talking about the Teams toolkit and Yeoman Generator in order to, there are like two tools you can use to build application for Teams. And I was wondering, and I'm sure the developers here also agree with me, what if I already have an application? Do I have to go back there and rewrite the code or use these tools in order to bring them to Teams?
A great question, and usually the answer is no, you can usually don't have to rewrite your existing application. In fact, the architecture of Teams makes it easy to reuse your existing application in many ways. So I'm not sure if you've seen this architecture diagram before, but this is the Teams architecture. Teams itself is really a brilliant facade on top of all of the different services in Microsoft 365. And so you can just add your services to that. This whole thing was designed for the cloud. So as long as you have a web page on, say, the internet anywhere, or a REST service that implements a bot anywhere on the internet, and we can reach that, you can actually reuse that functionality inside of Teams. Now, Teams just needs to know where is the web page, where is the web service, and that kind of thing. And that's where that manifest comes in that you've seen a couple of the other presenters already talking about. Manifest tells Teams how to stitch your application into the UI.
That's great. Waldick and Barnum took us through Teams capabilities. And in a few minutes, I'll be taking you through messaging extensions. Folks, we have to jump into Bob's brain because he knows a lot about bots. Do you love bots, Bob?
I do. I really love bots. I think what really intrigues me about them is that they support natural language. So in a way, they're the closest user interface to human, to the actual human experience. The thing is, of course, a bot is really just a user interface. So it is worth remembering that even though bots are really cool, you shouldn't have a bot just because they're cool. Make sure that you're solving the user's needs in the easiest way for them. So if it's easier for the user to click a tab and just see some information at a glance, rather than ask your bot questions to gather the information, the users are going to want the tab, right? Keep in mind the advantages of bots. An intuitive user experience, being able to face an ambiguous situation and just ask the bot for something, working where users already are, such as Microsoft Teams. And it's interesting that bots also have a self-generating history. So that chat that they leave behind can actually be useful if you use it correctly. And I think we'll both be showing a couple examples of that, as well as kind of small screen support. So another thing that you might or might not be aware of is that Teams apps can have different application scopes. So I'm sure you've seen this in the demos already. An app can run in a Teams channel or in a group conversation. in which case the audience for your app is a group of people, and you want to be mindful of that when designing your app. Then apps can also have a personal scope in which your app is accessed by individual users. And that's a great place to provide a summary or to notify users about something kind of, you know, specific to them. This distinction is especially important in the area of bots, which is why I bring it up here, because, well, maybe it's better if I just show you an example. Imagine that I am a consultant and I am walking out to my car after a long day of consulting work. And I go into Microsoft Teams and I'm going to bill my hours using this consulting bot. So all I have to do is ask for what I want. So I tell it that I worked 3 hours on the project, and it comes back with a confirmation card and everything's there. So I don't really have to do very much. I just ask what I want, and I used the phone's speech to text there, which is built into most phones today. And the bot is responding just to make sure that it got everything right. And there we are. I'm done.
Right. So I have a question. So what if the user leaves out some key information? Do they have to actually follow a command to invoke a bot?
Well, yeah, that's a really good point, because, you know, that's in a way the difference between a command line and a bot. Because a command line, you have to learn it. And if you don't get the command right, you get an error message, and then you kind of have to fix your errors. That's no fun, right? So watch what happens if I leave out some information. So I worked on a project. I didn't give it any information about what project. And now it's going to ask me, what project do I want to bill? Turns out there's two Contoso projects. So it's going to disambiguate which one. And I can answer colloquially, the first one. Or I can say, when did I deliver them? Last Tuesday, right? I don't have to remember, go look up what date it is. We have a computer here. It can figure out the dates, right? And now it's finally got all the information. So this works pretty well in a one-on-one situation. However, it doesn't work so well in a group conversation. So here I am in a team, and the first thing you might notice is that I have to mention the bot to get its attention. And the reason for that is because otherwise the bot would see everything that we said to each other in the team, and it would be really confusing for everyone. So I said, consulting bot, add Alice to Contoso. So I'm trying to add somebody to my project, and the bot comes up with this handy little card. So it's gotten as much information as it can out of what I said. For instance, it knows Alice, but it doesn't know which Alice. And it knows Contoso, but it doesn't know which Contoso project. And then all these other details are just easier for me to fill out here on the screen. In the group conversation, if I had a back and forth discussion of all this with the bot, it would be really awkward. It would take it would fill up pages of discussion and lose kind of the track of what the group was discussing. So instead, I'm just going to drop this confirmation card in place so that everybody on the team knows that Alice is joining our project, and I don't have to remember to send out an email or do some other form of out-of-band notification.
Oh, that's really cool. So we saw a bot adapting itself differently in a one-on-one chat and in a group chat. Sounds like a lot of people we know in real life.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so what other ways can we improve our application in Teams?
Well, the other big thing that I like to talk about is to use Azure Active Directory in the Microsoft Graph. Now, let me be clear. You don't have to use them. But if you have your own auth system, you can certainly use that. There's a pop-up mechanism in Teams for tabs where you can put your own login page in the pop-up and pass back to your tab running in an iframe some information that it needs for security. And the bot framework has an OAuth dialog. So if you have an OAuth compliant service, you can actually get the bot to log the user in. The problem is this isn't such a great user experience. It gets your app going quickly, but users now have to log in a second time to your app. And it's actually worse for the team owner, who might be the person deciding what apps to use. The team owner has to make sure everybody in the team has a login to your app. And then they have to, every time somebody joins or leaves the team, they need to update whatever permissions inside of your app. So imagine that somebody leaves the company, maybe under not the best circumstances. Do they really remember? Does the team owner really remember to go in and remove them from all the information that's in your app? That could become a real compliance problem. So single sign-on and authorization based on the team's membership is a huge benefit to usability. And then I think the best is if you also now use that Azure AD integration to call the Microsoft Graph and bring in information from what the user's doing every day in Microsoft 365. So let me show an example. This is a tab that's being used by a group of people who are doing a lot of field service visits. I'm logged in as Katie, and you can see that when I went into this tab, I didn't have to do another login. I was single signed in, and it knew who I was, and it's showing my field service visits for the day. So I can also look around and see what my teammates are doing. And if I click on one of the items, it's actually going to show me all the information I need to deliver this field service visit. And what's interesting is some of this information is in the app and some of it is in Microsoft 365. So all the documents, contracts we have with this customer, photos from on site, those are in Microsoft 365. The calendars are coming from 365 all through the Graph API, whereas all the other information is actually the app. Users don't want to think about where is this information. They want to think about how do I get my job done? And now Katie has one place to go for everything about this field service visit. Now she notices that her appointments are kind of close together. She's not sure if she can get to that second one on time. So she's going to ask for some help, and the app actually will send a message into the Teams channel when she types that. Now here I am. Now I can click on this deep link and it'll bring me back into the correct team, the correct channel, the correct tab, and even the correct field service visit so that I can check out this work that Katie's asked for some help with.
That's super cool. How does that deep linking work? Can I take a sneak peek at your code? Would you mind?
No, actually, I'd love to show off the code. So the code is really pretty simple. Here we are in the main part of the app, and I'm using the Teams JavaScript SDK to get at the Teams context. And out of there, and some of this isn't on the screen, but out of there, I'm getting the group ID, which is the same as the team ID, is also called a Microsoft 365 group, the channel ID, the entity ID, which uniquely identifies this tab, and the sub-entity ID, which apps can use for anything they want to. So that's where I'm passing in the appointment information. And the only other thing I need is the Teams app ID, which is the app ID that goes in the Teams manifest. So now here's the code when somebody clicks the button to send that message that constructs that deep link URL. And so it's kind of, we'll post a link to the documentation on this with the show notes in the Learn Together website. So you don't have to try to memorize this, but you can see all that information is in the deep link. And now in order to send it into Teams, it's really easy. It's just a graph call. And so here you can see what that looks like to send a message into the channel. And that's it. It's pretty straightforward.
Super cool.
So thanks, it was a great question. And now I have a question for Rabia. I mean, deep links are one way to save time for users, and I know you've been doing a lot of work with messaging extensions. Can messaging extensions save time for users too?
Oh, heaps. So let me just go into our messaging extensions demo as well later on to show you how easy that is. Let's see a before scenario. We've got Karen and Adil are two recruiters, and they are having a conversation of getting information about a candidate. And what's happening here is just a plain conversation, no messaging extension, nothing fancy. Adil has to go to a HR system and bring out information, copy it from some system, and then type in format, etc.
So you mean somebody had to copy and paste all that information from the application? That sounds like an awful lot of work. Kind of a waste of time.
It is. And there are two things that could be improved here. Now, Karen did not have to go to another person to get information from a HR system if HR system lives within Teams. So you could bring that application and integrate into Teams, get the information and present it in a nice way. And then don't know about you, Bob, but for me, as soon as I see notification of millions of messages in a channel, I look at the first one that's presented well, formatted well, etc. So that there are two things that could be improved. Now, I'll show you the other scenario where messaging extensions can help you find information and also present to you for getting that extra interaction or attention from your teammates. So let's go to this demo again. We've got the HR system. We have the same scenario of bringing information from the HR system. So here we have the talent bot to do that. We go to candidates and you search for the particular candidate. And here I'm showcasing a search-based messaging extension. There are two types. I think these were already touched base by Tomomi and Aicha. But yeah, here it is. I have my candidate information. It has brought back a nice looking card. There are buttons that you can click, schedule an interview with this candidate or see the feedback. So it's pretty clever. And you can see here another baby form, you know, you could fill out and probably even have integration with Outlook. So you could schedule that meeting right away with the candidate. Now, how useful is that?
Oh, that's really awesome. So I can see that you can search for business data and actually bring it into the conversation with this. But I have also heard about action messaging extensions. How are those different?
Yeah, so if you want to perform action, again, from the whole compose area, so anything that lives in the compose area where you type in message is a messaging extension. So this one is a search-based one. In an action, you definitely are not obviously searching for information, but you're providing some information. Maybe it's an action. In our case here in the HR system, maybe you want to add a new candidate information or a new position that's opened up. So how would you do that? So let's go back again and see a action-based messaging extension. We have, we are invoking the messaging extension about at mentioning, or you could go and search for the app. Here we have a nice button that would go ahead and perform the action for you, which opens up a dialog box, as you can see here, a nice form that you can go in and fill all information. It needn't be a form that you're filling. It could also be just an information you're viewing about a person. So that's the action happening here. And right after I have made sure that everything is fine, I can confirm this and then it goes back to the HR system again. So it's pretty useful because I have not gone into another application here. I have done everything. I've not opened up the HR system. I'm not logged in. I'm here in my Teams, in my conversation with my teammates, and I have done all that. So this is how an action-based messaging extension would work. And hey, I can also put that nice card again and call out maybe a recruiter and, you know, get more attention to what I've just done.
So how does Team know about your messaging extension? How do you make it pop in the UI?
Right. So everything lives in the manifest file, the file that Bob was talking about earlier. So what I will do is I'll bring up the manifest file for this particular application and walk you through where the messaging extension is. So I already have this file open here. As you can see, this is a JSON file again, and you've got this compose extension area, which is where you're going to go ahead and put all the information out of your web service or where your messaging extensions are hosted. We did two things here. We did search for a candidate and we also created a new position. You can see those here. So I searched for the candidate. This information would let the team know that this is what the compose or the messaging extension is for that. As you can see here, the type is query. That means it's a search-based messaging extension. We've got the open position one that we that was an action-based messaging extension. Again, the type is action. And you've also got parameters that you can pass. So everything lives in here. And this is what Teams application uses to go ahead and then call your application or a web service that's hosted online.
So why is this a bot? What's that doing there technically?
Good question. So this is great because, you know, we're talking about messaging extensions and you see a bot ID there. So messaging extension uses the bot framework in order to authenticate or find your or connect or communicate with your web service. So it's like a security thing that works out just fine. And for that, you need to either register a bot with channel registration, or you could, if you already have a bot, then you could go ahead and use that as well. So this is why we have a bot ID here.
Thanks.
That's great. So I can see that messaging extensions are useful in so many ways, but what if your app wants to interact with just one user in the group context, maybe in response to somebody clicking on a card or taking some other kind of action?
Yeah, that's good. So I guess what you're trying to find out is whether I always have to go to the compose area or not, or can I just do an action where
exactly.
I you know, get my own form? So for that, we have the task module. So task modules are basically, I would say, they are these dialog boxes that would pop up and give you some information, or it would be a form again, like you saw earlier. And another good thing about task modules is that you don't necessarily have to build one if you already have one. And in our case, we were talking about a HR system, and I cannot think of any application like that not have a form of its own, right? So if you want to bring your forms in, you could use task modules. There are like little iframes that you can open up from your messaging extension. So maybe to make it a bit more clear, I'll go to another demos to show you how that works. So again, coming back to our HR system here, you can see I've got a candidate feedback form that is hosted online in our HR system. I've got some information on the feedback that I got for a particular candidate. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring this form into our Teams application inside a card. So you saw this already where we're bringing information of a candidate. We can open the candidate feedback, which pops up a dialog box. And this is exactly the same file or the same form you saw earlier brought back into Teams. So this benefits you because you don't have to rewrite things just because you have your application in Teams now. Now, this is pretty useful. You could either build your own task modules or you could bring whatever you want to bring as long as that URL is hosted online.
Well, that's really awesome. So it's really just another iframe, kind of like a tab, only
exactly.
A little bit more interactive. And
yeah.
One thing I noticed is like the cards, once you send them, they're static, but you could update them, but it's not quite the same. You are pulling in real-time data about that feedback, right? So that was really cool.
That's right. So yeah, there should be some code going in there and getting the parameters and filling out that form.
I guess another scenario that I'm wondering about is what if the application just wants to send some information into a team or maybe even broadcast information out to multiple teams?
Connectors are like one of my favorites. So custom connectors will do that job for you. Just all you have to keep in mind is that connectors are not interactive like a bot. They do whatever they've been told. So in our case, if you want to broadcast a news or a notification out to multiple teams, then you could use custom connectors. And let me just show you how you can configure this. Again, in the same context of this HR system, we can have a connector maybe when a person or a candidate is offered a job. Let's just broadcast it out to all the recruiters or the HR managers. So to do that, they need to have a custom connector. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how that's done. So we've got a very busy recruiters channel here. So much going on. and they want to be updated about whatever is happening in the HR system when a candidate is offered a job, or let's call it in our context here, the stage change for a candidate. So they're going to go ahead and click on the connectors, and you can see here all the other built-in connectors that are already available. And my favorite one is the incoming webhook. If you've got a URL and you want to send data from a service to your team, you could use that one. But okay, I'm going to another topic. But Let's just search for the talent one here, which is a custom connector. So we have the HR talent connector. I'm going to go ahead and configure for this particular channel in this team, which will then send me a notification whenever this action is happening. And I don't care where it happens because I need to just be informed, right? So I'm going to go ahead and save this in my channel. So you can see here that now I've already set it up for my team to get all the information and updates. Now let's go back to the recruitment planning channel, which is where all the good things happen because we are here in the hiring board and we're going to give someone a good news by giving them a job. So we've got Linda here. Her interview went fantastic and she's going to be offered a job. So I'm going to change the stage for Linda to offered. And the moment I do that, you can see that the recruiter's channel is already lighting up because the notification has been sent out by your connector. And again, in the general channel as well at the same time. So imagine the kind of time you're saving for anyone who's going to sit in the back of the Teams and start typing this notification or send an email. That's not going to happen when you have a custom connector. So it's pretty useful. And you can see here the connector not only gives a notification, but it also provides all the information that the teammates need in order to understand what kind of change happened and this, the candidate information, etc. So I find it pretty useful. And I'm always excited about talking about connectors.
Well, that's really awesome. And I notice the connector sent, is that another adaptive card?
Yes, it is.
So maybe you could just clarify a little bit about adaptive cards. I mean, we've been using them a lot here, but what is an adaptive card anyway?
Yeah, so look, I like to call adaptive cards as these actionable, good-looking cards because they're so, so good-looking. And they're no stranger to you. Like, if you have been using an adaptive card, you have been using your Outlook to approve some emails, then you have been using an adaptive card. If you're a Windows user, then definitely your timeline, whatever cards you see there, is an adaptive card. Surprise. And your Windows notification that you like to ignore is an adaptive card as well. So any notification sent out by bots and teams, most of the time they're adaptive cards if you see buttons and stuff there. It's really powerful and they're very interactive content from your application embedded into another application. And the good thing is, well, I don't know if you've noticed, but you see the same adaptive card example, not the timeline one, but the others. They're all the same card, but they act or look differently in different apps. So wherever it's hosted, if it's an Outlook, it shows up like an Outlook card. If it's a notification, it looks like a notification. It doesn't look like a Outlook approval card, right? So it blends well into any experience. And there is a tiny catch there because, you know, you really don't have control for the UI aspect of an adaptive card, which is great because that's what we want. You want things to blend in. And it's also open source, so you can go ahead and see how this is wired up. And also reusable, you can create reusable templates and the templating service, which basically would differentiate it from your data, your template from your data. In that case, you could keep reusing the template anywhere you want.
Wow, these adaptive cards look so useful, and I love when I learn something new, getting my hands dirty and actually learning and how to use it. So what can viewers do to get started building these, and what language is it written in anyways?
Take a guess. F-sharp, C-sharp? Bob. No, you just have to know JSON, so which is really cool. Like even consultants can go in and create their adaptive cards with. And you know what? Since you asked that question, I'm going to go ahead and show you how you can build one. And all you need is a browser and an internet connection that works, which most of the time doesn't work for me. So we have here adaptivecards.io. This is the site you need to memorize, but don't worry if you haven't, we have links to everything. So adaptivecards.io is where you go, and you can see here it's a site that you can, this is your go-to site if you want to build one. So you've got samples here. There are heaps of samples that you can take a sneak peek at and see how it's being built. You can see here there are all JSON and yeah, it is. And you've got the data here. You've got the adaptive card here. You can see how it looks here. And another aspect is if you don't want to, divide your data from your template, you could also uncheck this templating option. But I suggest templating is so much easier. So you can view that as well. And another good thing is you have a designer. So this is where you would come in and go ahead, go crazy about your designs. So you can drag and drop the elements here and see how it looks. You can see how it looks inside a Microsoft Teams light mode. You can see how it would look in a Windows notification. So it's pretty handy here. I would say, you know, all the work you do for adaptive cards get done here.
So did you know that there's also a Visual Studio Code extension?
Oh, I did not.
Yeah, it's not quite as cool as the website, but it's really handy if you're already in Visual Studio Code.
Sounds amazing. So looks like the sausage is made. Now, how do we get it out? So how do you get your application out to your users?
Well, let me just do a little demo and show what some of those options are. So here, you've already seen App Studio quite a bit. And in all the other demos, I'm sure. And really, now you know that this is just a JSON editor that makes it a little easier because it knows the format of everything. By the way, a really great tool when you're using App Studio or editing the manifest is the manifest schema, which again, we'll post in the notes because that describes what every single field does and how Teams uses it in a lot more detail. Anyway, when you've got your manifest the way you want, you've seen people install it, and that would install it for just the developer to use. I'm going to actually show downloading it. And the other option, of course, is publishing, which would publish it into our Teams store. And that's a whole process. We'll provide a link in the Learn Together site on how to do that. I'm just going to download it. And this is something I might do if I was either moving it to another tenant, or maybe I'm going to install this for use within an enterprise. So what I downloaded was a zip file. And here's the zip file. Inside is that same manifest file that you saw before. So again, you don't need any special tools. All you need is the ability to edit a JSON file and the ability to make a zip archive. So now let me upload that into our app catalog. So here under apps in the Teams sidebar, you'll see kind of all the apps for my tenant. So my tenant is called MS Labs. So built for MS Labs, that's my tenant app catalog. And below that are all the apps that are available in the store. So from other vendors and from Microsoft. So I'm gonna go ahead and upload this and you'll see I have a couple of choices. I could upload this for me or my team, which is sort of like the install button in App Studio. And I have to have permission to do that, by the way. That's turned off by default. So you want to kind of maybe bake cookies for your admin and make sure that they know that they're really loved and that they want to turn on your ability to upload apps and maybe even upload the app to the tenant app catalog, which I'm only able to do because I'm a tenant admin. So I'm going to go find that zip file and upload it. And there it is. So now notice that a lot of the information that was stitched into that manifest file is now here for the user to view as they're deciding whether or not to install the app. I'll go ahead and add this to a team, and I think I'll add it to the emergency response team. And that's all I need to do. So this is how users can find your app and install it either into a team or for their own use. In this case, I need to configure one of the tabs. And I'm done. And the app is ready to go. The bot is ready and everything like that.
So users need to look in the store, right? So is there any other way you can push these app to users?
Absolutely. So an admin can set up something called a Teams app policy. So what you're looking at here is the screen in Teams administration. And notice that there's a Get Started app that I've proactively installed and pinned for every user that this policy applies to, which might be the whole company. So now users are going to come in and they're going to see my app pinned to the very top of their navigation bar. And it's that easy. Users don't have to install it. It's just there. And by the way, this is the this particular app is the Learning Pathways app, which is a really, it's a free one from Microsoft. And again, there's pointers in the notes on how to set that up as sort of some nice built-in end user training for users. The other useful tool is a Teams template. So here I've got a screenshot. The admin is creating a new team template for staffing projects. And by the way, you can do all this with the Graph API. So your app could actually set this up as part of the install process. So now when the user goes to create a new team, one of the choices is a staffing team. And that team has the app pre-installed so that after it's created, it's already got everything that was in that Teams template, including extra channels, all the various features of Teams turned on and off, and apps installed automatically as part of creating that team.
Now that we have shown you how to build and deploy your application, what are you going to build today? And please visit aka.ms/learntogether to find the links to all the resources that we discussed today. And also for your learning path, go to aka.ms/devapps for teams. Now over to you, Christina.